March 19th meeting of the Record Reform Commission to order. And can we take a roll call of all those in attendance? Why don't we start down there with you, Bill?
Bill Saltes.
Tony Matthews at large.
Bob Gordon, Leesburg.
Scott Amber, Tom Julia at large.
Tom Walker, adopted.
Cliff Pierce, Broad Run.
We have county staff with us as well. We have some guests with us as well. And let me first ask if there's anybody that wishes to speak and as part of our public comment, public input. Nobody?
Okay.
All right then. We have no public input tonight. Let's move to approval of our February 19th meeting summary.
And Mr. Chairman, I've reviewed the minutes of February 19th and recommend approval without changes.
Excellent.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Abstain. I was not here for that meeting.
Okay. We'll note that, and the minutes are approved as drafted. Let's do some updates. I want to add a couple of these to the updates to these, if I may. Tim or Julie, could you acquaint us a little bit with the request we had from the board to provide to them that fairly lengthy, extensive document you had on RLCPS communications?
I wasn't there, but you want me to explain?
I think it came up during one of March 4th. There was a budget work session with the schools and the board supervisors. During that work session, several members of the supervisors questioned the school board and asked to.
I don't know if they can hear you.
All right, I'll speak. On March 4th, the board had a formal budget work session, which was actually their first budget work session. Traditionally, that first work session is held with the schools. So either the first one or second one is taken with the schools, where the schools present their operating budget to the board, and then the board asks questions and that sort of thing. During that discussion, there were several board members, board of supervisor members, who raised the issue about cooperation on behalf of the school board and school administration with the Government Reform Commission, and specifically request the school board to direct their staff to cooperate with the Government Reform Commission. During that discussion and the back and forth, some of the school board members indicated that they were not aware of any communication between the Government Reform Commission and school administration. And so, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm summarizing, because the discussion lasted roughly 30 minutes or more. So at the end of that discussion, Mrs. Volpe, Supervisor Volpe, made a motion to direct me and staff to provide to the school board with copies to the board of supervisors of all communication between the Government Reform Commission and school administration, or any member of the school board. And so we went ahead and did that. So we went and found everything that we could find that was communication between a member of the Government Reform Commission, any member of the school board, or any member of school administration. I apologize if we missed anything, but we tried to find everything we could, and we sent it on to the board pursuant to the board's direction.
Would anybody have any questions about that? I think that was an excellent request, and I'm actually glad to see it all consolidated that way. We did a lot of work over about 9 months. So,
160 pages.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for your quick response to the message as well.
I want to include this here. An item came to Scott and I last week, a proposal from Cliff. And actually, maybe Cliff, I can ask you just to summarize your thought on getting closure on this whole LCPS issue.
Why don't I read it? So in the way this came up in subcommittee, when we talked about it at our last subcommittee meeting, we as a group had kind of thought we were kind of done with this issue. We weren't getting anywhere, and unfortunately we weren't going to be able to continue trying to pursue this because of the resistance we were getting
from the school board.
From the school board.
Mm-hmm. And to put a fire point, I think more from LCPS.
The staff, I'm sorry, right, not the school board.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that some school board members were like, well, maybe if you give us one or two specific items that we could specifically direct staff to respond to, maybe that's, you know, so I think in some of the members of the board and the school board, they still think somehow maybe this group should still be the one that tries to engage in this. And my thoughts and the committee's thoughts were at this point, we're beyond that point. We're kind of got our last tasks we're looking to wrap up, and thought really if there's a lot of, I think, issues that could be and should be pursued, but it might be best served if the school board and the board members appoint their own commission specifically for the task of looking at shared services and consolidations. And with the school board having appointed members, then there might be better buy-in for them to actually accomplish something. So that was, I wanted to get something sent to them to say, you know, we're done, and here's an idea of what you might want to do. So anyways, where's the, what my draft was? There it is. To the Board of Supervisors from us regarding County, Loudoun County Public Schools shared service consolidations. As you are aware, the Government Reform Commission has previously submitted its report to the Board of Supervisors and School Board of our inability to provide a recommendation on the issue of shared services consolidation due to the lack of cooperation from Loudoun County Public Schools staff. We are pleased that both boards remain committed to this topic, and has been suggested by members of the school board that a few individual issues be singled out for study, and they will direct LCPS staff to be more responsive. The Government Reform Commission does not believe that this would be the best approach. This is a fairly lengthy topic, and the Government Reform Commission is planning to wrap up its activities in the next few months. It is our recommendation that the two boards create a committee to look at this issue. It is our belief that a body that has members appointed directly by the school board will have better luck getting cooperation from LCPS staff. The Government Reform Commission is disappointed that we've been unable to provide recommendations on this important issue. We believe it is ripe for some changes that could result in saving significant taxpayer dollars as well as improving the working relationship between the two boards.
I think it's pretty good. I mean, what it shows to me to some extent is that school board staff stonewalling work, you know. I mean, but we are where we are with it, and I agree that now, now we'll start over and we'll come up with a selected list of some finite subjects that we can discuss and beat our heads against it. I like your approach, which is let them appoint, if they want to do it, let them appoint some people and the board appoint some people, and they can take it from there as a standalone discussion because it's very complex.
We would not change wood luck to success. Other than that, I think
you would
just change luck to success. As opposed to better luck, better success. But I think it's the right way to go. And if there's any ambiguity as to what we're actually doing with the issue, and I think it gives a comprehensive next step that can be taken rather than trying to release me a little bit of time.
So is there, do we need a motion to...
I move, Mr. Chairman, that the Government Reform Commission sends this as a recommendation to the school board with a copy of the board of supervisors.
I'll second that.
The board of supervisors rather with a copy to the school board.
I'll second that.
Discussion. I would agree. I think this is a good way to close it out. We took our best shot. We were rebuffed. Then we were dragged into the pre-budget session, and then excuses were made. I think that's exactly what we got. There's no nice way to say it. It was anything but cooperative. And I want to just say for the record, I want to contrast that with I think what we all saw from the county administration, general government side, which was a lot of cooperation versus none. The only thing I would say is I'm happy to see it drafted as it is, but it could very well be that it is not a separate committee as opposed to the current joint committee, which now chaired this year by the chairman of the finance committee. It's a very strong player at the top for the board supervisor. I think it can go either way, but I do think that idea of both boards participating in this is the way to go. Any other comments? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It is unanimous. A couple of other items I want to make note of. Julie or someone or Bob, would someone like to just appoint us with the final action of the board on the economic development proposal?
I think as the minutes we just approved reflect, the board reviewed the EDA item at its meeting on February 20th, which occurred since our last meeting, and basically they voted 6-2-1. I don't know of any developments since then. They've you know, they didn't fully follow our recommendation on the EDA, but I don't know what else to say.
We got a fair hearing, and
yeah.
Our particular approach was not the approach the board
did. Right. We think they could have gone further, but it's all about control, and, you know, I think, I mean, I would just have to say this for the record. I think that the Board of Supervisors has been extremely receptive to our various recommendations and listening to us and providing us with excellent staff support. So the fact that they don't go the direction we recommended on this is okay. You know.
For the benefit of others who may not pay as much attention to discussions at the Chamber and EDC and other groups, the IDA, now EDA itself, leadership of that organization, the chair and the vice chair, have both stated that they see the elevation of the IDA to an EDA as a major step forward. They think it repositions the authority. They think that it's a big branding issue, industrial, so 19th century. So they think that actually this is an important step that increases the profile of the organization and positions it to be a significant player in economic development going forward. So quite frankly, it may not have been everything that we recommended, but I think it's a positive step.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't think the step would be taken without a recommendation. So I don't want to break my arm patting you and your committee for the excellent work that you did on the back, but I think that there was an outcome. It was a good outcome. So,
yeah.
Okay. Good.
It's also positioned for the future.
Yes, I agree.
It is positioned that way. A couple of other items have come to us from the members of the board in the past couple of days as a result of the budget item on the sheriff's office. Supervisor Clark sent an email just asking, and I'll just ask for those of you on the subcommittee to work on this. Did we indeed take a look at, when we looked at the sheriff's operations in Fairfax County and Prince William County in terms of fiscal responsibility and in terms of the way those two offices are structured. I believe we looked at Fairfax. I can't recall if we looked at Prince William also.
Well, I don't know that we, those are jurisdictions in which they have already done what was up for consideration, which was limit the sheriff's to its constitutional responsibilities of jail and courtroom security and have a private police department. We didn't delve into whether or not the police departments in those jurisdictions have cost overruns or how they're operated from a fiscal management point of view. You know, we were looking at it from a more, call it 20,000 foot level.
I'm assuming this is a reaction to the current headlines.
Yeah, exactly. Does anybody on the commission feel that we should reconsider our recommendations at all in light of the current headlines?
So in my opinion, we're commenting on the structure, not necessarily how well the structure is currently being run by those in charge of it. I just don't think that it's relevant because there's suddenly a cost overrun. Now they want to know if we looked at this or should we reconsider it because the current leadership is spending too much money for whatever reason. I just don't think it's relevant to our analysis of whether it is the right structure for the county.
Anybody else have a point of view?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it makes me wonder whether or not, you know, we might have come down a different way, but I don't feel strongly enough about it to want to reopen. I mean, if the board asked us to reopen it, maybe, you know, then we would, but I don't feel strongly enough about it to want to get into it at this time without some direction from the board.
We put hours and hours and hours into that analysis and took a look at police versus police plus sheriff versus just sheriff. We did an exhaustive analysis of it, interviewed a lot of people, went and visited with a lot of people, and came up with the suggestions that we did. I don't see where creating another department would help with cost overrun containment. I don't think we should revisit it either, but if we're directed to, we will.
I agree. The reasons that we did not recommend for a change in the structure are not at all impacted by these cost overruns. We concluded that the inherent costs of changing the structure did not yield enough benefit to going down that road. We also did opine as to the level of professionalism of which the department was being run, and we were looking specifically at issues like training. As I recall, we were looking at policies and procedures and programs that were being put in place to professionalize our
accreditation was part of that, too.
We didn't really look at fiscal management policies within the board. So I don't think that anything that we commented on is impacted by this particular matter. This was within the scope of what would be commented on.
I would even go a step further. I don't think they have asked us to reopen this. I would even go there. They asked us to reopen it because of this. I think we should respectfully decline because I don't think we should be in the position of reacting to the current headlines. And I go back to the analysis has nothing to do with how the current sheriff and staff are managing their funds. I just don't think it's relevant.
The only thing I would have to say about that is, and I don't want to give you all the impression that the way I enjoy myself when alone is watching budget sessions on Channel 40.
Yes,
but
it
I
is.
Did watch some of these sessions, and I think that underlying the specifics about, you know, the cost overruns and overtime and unfilled positions, a little bit of the flavor that I saw was board members and perhaps Ralph mostly feeling that the current incumbent was less than 100% responsive to keeping the board informed, responding to board and staff questions and so forth. And certainly that is something that if they are your, it might be politic for a constitutional officer to pay more attention to the supervisors, but if they're your direct boss, it's even more important. I just say that because I think that's a little bit of a flavor that I see going on. But I, like I say, I'm not interested in, you know, delving into it further on our own motion.
I'd echo all of that. I agree. We have not been asked. I think it's something that's swirling around out there. And I think there are some that may question whether our recommendations were indeed appropriate given the current headlines, quote, unquote. I still think they do. I would certainly stand by our recommendations, notwithstanding the current headlines. We took that up and actually made our recommendations around mid-year, well before a lot of these issues were even heard or were even discoverable in either way. So it's not that we missed anything. In my view, I agree with hearing around the table here. We stand by our recommendations, and there's nothing here in the news that would cause us to seem to reconsider. One other issue that came up, and that is there's been some correspondence on this between myself and a couple of members of the commission and staff regarding a request from Supervisor Volpe for Transportation and Land Use Committee. The item from Loudoun Water that was referred to from the board to her committee, she was interested in more detail on that other than what was in the final document itself. I think Julia communicated with you and with Tanya as well on that. I don't want to leave her hanging on that because that request is now about 10 days ago. So.
And I just scanned through my notes. I've got another notebook of my notes from the board meetings where the board meeting where that got referred. So I'll check that and also talk to Mark Nealis, who co-chaired Loudoun Water with me.
Right.
And we'll get back to you by the end of the week.
Okay. And I can also call Mr. House and check with him as well. But Tanya and I emailed separately.
Yeah, we'll.
So
Julie and I will work it out and we'll get back to you by the end of the week.
Julie, would you mind sending out a note to Supervisor Volpe?
Absolutely.
On this?
Okay.
All right. Let's move on to Subcommittee 1. Well, let's report for Subcommittee 1. Scott, would you like to do that?
I think so. We have submitted the final outsourcing recommendation, so I'm not quite sure which I'm going to report on tonight. I would say that we have submitted it. It is being considered in the Government Services Committee.
Finance Government Services Committee on April 9th.
On April 9th. We plan to attend that. Members of Subcommittee plan to attend that to be available to answer any questions that the supervisors might have for us, but that recommendation is away and
when's
April 9th.
When's that meeting again?
April 9th?
6 p.m.
Five. That's Government, the
Finance Government Services Committee.
Yeah, John sent an email to a few people that he could not be here to. So I'm not sure.
Another one that he was going to be. So the last text message from him.
Last I heard was he was not going to.
But in any event, next steps, April 9th, Supervisor Moore's committee. I'm just making sure I have on my calendar. I do. Second point, the county government fees for services update. In our subcommittee, we developed some filters that we asked county administration to place. That we'd ask county administration to place on our query, so we could eliminate certain services that are provided by the county with the fee. By way of example, fees that are statutorily required, or the amount of the fee is set by statute. There's no point in us spending time looking at a fee if the amount of the fee is a matter of law. So we said, by way of example, eliminate those. We asked that the context for the remaining fees be provided by benchmarking on other neighboring jurisdictions, or benchmarking from other neighboring jurisdictions what fees they charge for that service. And then when we have this data back, we can then start analyzing it and come to some actionable conclusions. Julie today sent me an email with an update as to the timeline. Rather than me relate what the email said, Julie, would you be so kind as to brief the group?
Certainly. The first part of my email said, one of the things we can rule out or take off the list, if you will, are fees in which there's 100% cost recovery.
Correct.
So one thing
I... one of the filters that we said, if we're actually recovering our costs, let's not spend time looking at those fees. Julie's question is, what does that mean? In county parlance, cost recovery essentially means that the variable costs associated with the activity are recovered. The marginal staff time that is allocable to the activity on the part of the county, by way of example, is paid for. Fixed overhead, such as the use of the county facility, if I understood your email correctly, would not be part of what the county would consider fully recovered. So the question to the group is, how do we want to analyze full recovery according to standard county approach, which is the marginal cost associated with the activity, or do we want some kind of a fully loaded cost recovery with overhead? I didn't answer the email because I thought that was a topic worthy of discussion amongst the group.
So that was one part of the email. We call it direct operating costs in terms of the cost recovery definition, to include salaries, benefits, and all O&M related to that program, but not building, utilities, maintenance, vehicles, that kind of thing. The second part to my email, what I did after I received Mr. Hemstreet's message regarding last month's meeting was basically make a list of all the information that was requested. It's an extensive list, and one in which, by and large, most of it would need to come through or from the budget office in management and financial services. I've asked Mr. Mays to be here tonight for a couple of reasons. We are in the midst of the budget process. In April, they will be, the rest of March and April, they will be finalizing that budget. April, May, and June, they're getting ready to bring up their portion of the ERP system, which Mr. Mays has talked to you about. Sort of bottom line, the following through on your request for information regarding fees will take some time, and will take probably several months. We would probably be providing it to you in segments, if you will, as we can get to it. It is a very extensive list. Even once we do narrow it down, take out mandated fees, take out 100% cost recovery, it's a lot of information that's been requested, so it will simply take some time to get it to you.
I think the fees we can provide, the issue is the benchmarking.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what takes the time. Some of the fees we can easily benchmark. One of the harder challenges is, one of the questions was fees that we don't charge that other jurisdictions charge.
Right.
And so that's probably
the most time consuming piece.
Yeah, because we don't know what
looks like. We're trying to answer questions we don't. Right.
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 Okay, so what I would suggest is that you provide us with what you can provide us as quickly as possible, which would be the fees themselves. When we look at what the fees are themselves, that will likely be suggestive to us as to which are more important than others, and then we could direct your time more effectively with respect to, say, you know, please provide benchmarks on this subset, not everything.
Well, let me ask you a question. Fees and sub-state percentage, Ben, do we do that relatively quickly? Because you're going to want the sub-state percentage. So you're going to want that information.
Correct. I think important, looking at the fee, absent knowing what the total cost is limited use to it.
For some program areas, that's relatively simple. The land development stuff has all been done through.
Land development's off the table.
It's, yeah.
Okay.
That's so it's only, it's basically...
So it's parks and...
School and park and ride.
Parks, libraries, transportation,
yes,
etc. There are a variety of fees. Most of them have not gone through the same kind of...
The landfill's 100% cost recovery, so they have...
Outside of parks, well, depending on the definition of 100%, parks and rec is the largest number of fees. Probably the one that has been examined the most, both internally and in comparison to the neighbors. So there are a variety of studies that I think Diane can probably simply give to us now that were done a year or two ago. You know, so there's probably a lot of stuff with that. In terms of the other agencies, it has never been nearly as rigorous on the whole, because the dollar amounts are not that material for the most part. The landfill area is the one that is a large number, but it is, you know, the board's policy is 100% fee recovery. And they've done that. Transportation, the fees for the commuter bus system. Again, that's a pretty simple methodology. So some of them, most of them are pretty simple. When we start looking at the human service agencies, I think it's getting more complicated at that point, because those are the ones where you begin to talk about which ones you can recover, which ones you're even allowed to recover. Like, for example, the VRA Agency on Aging is part of Parks and Rec, but in exchange for the meager amount of funds we get from the federal government, for the AAA, we're not allowed to charge fees in certain areas. So there are nuances to some of these, but some will take longer than others.
So what I would suggest is that if you can make available to us what is possible to pull together within the next 2 to 3 weeks, and let us know order of magnitude, what's missing. In other words,
the next 2 weeks are the worst possible. I mean, we'll do what we can.
The next 2 weeks
are the worst possible time to ask me for anything.
We have to present the final budget for the board to vote on April 3rd. So the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Right. The appropriations resolution goes to the Board of Supervisors April 3rd. That's the document that rolls everything else.
Are you able to
look? I understand the position that you're in. Okay, yes. This is a directive that was given to us by the board, so we're simply responding to the board. I imagine that the budget is a higher priority to the board, so that's fine. And, what I would suggest is you tell us what is possible and give us a date. If it's the middle of April, fine. It's the middle of April.
That gets much more doable.
Ben, what about the other piece? Because they also asked, separate from the fees, was also the supplements.
Ben,
we ought to be able to do that, because that's a quick run.
We can do a run on what supplements we provide now.
Right. By Aaron indicated by their April, by that subcommittee's April meeting.
Yeah,
so.
that one I think
is
supplements.
That information.
Now,
so
what do
you
think?
Because we just did that as part of this. We just
second.
We did the MOUs with the state on those.
So. What did you mean by supplement, though? I guess would be part of
that. It's what I say to you.
Okay.
It's a supplements on those departments that we had the MOUs with.
Health and juvenile court
correct.
Services.
Correct.
Right.
Magistrates.
And magistrates and the five constitutional officers and the
right,
registrar.
But right. A lot of their focus was on, there were two pieces. One is that, but the bigger focus was on state and county positions.
And comparability.
Right.
But that's a separate issue from the fees. Related.
It is, but there were two. You asked us for three things, anyway. So
I agree.
The second one, that stuff's available.
Okay.
So we can bring that to you.
So let's go ahead and get that for the second.
the third one, well, you guys said the third one you'll do after you get through the first two.
Right,
the third one is whether or not you see, we should be doing paying for county positions and state operations, but I don't know.
Correct.
Because that was the third issue. So we weren't going to touch the third one.
So we lose the first
one. What we can do is bring you the information on the second one because we just redid all of it. I mean, that information we had.
Okay, so let's start there for our meeting on the second. And for our meeting on the second, I would like to know when we could get the data that's requested from the first point, and to the degree that that data can be provided in batches, that's fine. But we'd like to know as we get those batches what the universe is of what we're not yet seeing.
Gotcha.
So that we can understand that we can do
it. How much more is right. yet to come?
Exactly. And it may be that we get to a certain point where we say, well, we've just accounted for 85% of all the fees, let's stop.
Yeah, there's not, I mean, after, yeah. really Let's after Parks and Rec and Transportation, there's not a lot of bang for the buck after that. There might be some.
Understood. All right, does that give you enough information with which to proceed, Julie? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
I will tell you, the comparator, as Tim said, the comparator, but what we don't know is very hard. And
I can imagine.
And I can tell you from our experience has also been, the Parks and Rec, they've got good comparator stuff. But we're not doing land development fees, but I can tell you when we've done land development fees with the board and we've looked at comparator stuff, that, and I anticipate we'll have this with some of the other areas, they may do things a different way, they may call things a different thing, and that's where it gets tricky, is we have our legacy systems and our legacy way of doing business. And it may just be that, you know, what we call a fee for a particular human service agency thing may be called something different and compiled by someone different in a different jurisdiction. And it's the apples to oranges comparison that gets more difficult.
Understood. Does anyone else have any comments or questions on that exchange with regard to the data request?
It seems to me that this is going to be helpful given that committee is meeting in 2 weeks. We need to have that back to the subcommittee by the end of next week. Because that's the only agenda
The question is, does it make sense to meet if we don't have the information available?
Well, I think that we need to have some information for the meeting. There's no purpose in the meeping. Alternatively, we can look at delaying the meeting until we have more information. And that would be fine.
For now, I would leave your meeting as scheduled. A member of Ben's staff has indicated that the information regarding supplements will be ready for your April 2nd meeting. In terms of some of the information regarding fees, some of it I can provide to you. It may not be it today, but for example, Parks and Rec provided a pretty extensive item to the Finance Committee within the last 6 months to 9 months on their fee structure. And I think it'd be really helpful for you to have that. So again, I'll batch it to you, and we'll try and get it out to you so that we're not laying it on you at the second. If we get close to that date and I think we're going to have zero, I'll let you know.
But we can take other action.
But we'll try.
And I think Parks had some. They have had in the past when you compared it.
Yes, they have.
No, did you say transportation was one that you could actually put together fairly quickly?
Because of the commuter bus.
Yeah, I think
that's just...
So I think that's something, and it's definitely a big topic where I thought worthy of looking into. So,
and the new commuter bus, the new arrangement's going to be with BRTA, will have to remain to be seen.
Right.
Up until this point in time, that has been and through the rest of this fiscal year, that will continue to be a contribution. It will turn into a contract for service, at which point then we become in the fee business for that.
All right, that sounds like a plan, and again, Julie, just keep everybody advised if you can't get that in time.
There was the question of what does cost recovery mean? So my proposal in this regard would be that we follow the accounting principles of the county, and to the degree that the county declares something as being fully cost recovered, that we go by that standard. That does beg a question as to how the county does certain accounting things that are different than the way we do them in the private sector. As Mr. Walker has observed on various occasions, the way that we have to account for rent and leasing, by way of example, is different than how it's done in the government sector. I don't think that we're ready to take on the issue of how the county does its accounting. And so therefore, I think we should conduct our inquiry within the parameters of the definitions used by the county for cost recovery. That would be my opinion.
I think that if we don't take into account some portion of facilities and other fixed costs, then we may be doing a disservice to what we're examining. And I agree that we need to understand kind of what's going into it. And so to put slightly different way, if, for example, the collection of services that we're examining makes up 100% of the utilization of a particular facility, then the cost of that facility, in theory, should be included in the costs and therefore the cost recovery for the services that are being provided out of that facility. Alternatively, if it's a facility that would otherwise not be in use but has to exist for another purpose, like it's probably a bad example, but a fireman's hall, the firehouse exists, the meeting hall exists for the sake of the fire department, and the fact that it's not used 50% of the time doesn't really add to the cost of it. It exists, and so therefore there's no really additional cost because of having meetings in that space. And so I'd like to at least understand what the baseline is, if the types of services that we're talking about and the non-recoverable costs, because that haven't been included into this fee formula, really should be or not.
We can tell you what those costs are. Ben will be much more eloquent in his response than I will be. We can tell you what the costs are. However, the range of them and the volume of them and the fact that we don't account for it in that way, it makes my head spin, the complexity of these, one of our favorite terms. But when you're talking about 11 community centers, library, however many libraries, 20 plus mental health, MR group homes. So you're talking a whole lot of facilities that are all in different stages of
financing,
leasing, so forth. So
right, on. And maybe what I'm thinking of is not so much what the costs are of the facilities, but to at least answer the question of whether we should be thinking about an allocation of those costs to the recoverable fees aspect. So in other words, look at the utilization of the property that a given program is being run out of, and is the utilization mostly recoverable fee programs or mostly not?
Gotcha, that's an easier task?
We can talk about it.
Right.
Bob, go ahead. I have a question.
If I understand you, the way you determine that you've recovered full recovery is based on variable costs for the employee and whatever
direct operating
expense. Is Loudoun, there's generally accepted accounting principles, and then there's generally accepted accounting principles for governmental organizations, and is your method of determining whether you fully recovered your costs consistent with generally accepted accounting principles for government organizations?
I hope so, but I'll
In other words, are you doing it the way all other governments do it?
Hey, can I broaden that question, though, because I think it's related. When we look at the program guide, and we look at it, we say this program costs X amount of money per year. Where does that X come from? And is the question of full cost recovery related to that X? Are we looking at apples to apples when you tell us here's what a program costs and here's what cost recovery means? Because otherwise, the whole framework of the program guide would have to be rethought based on the question that Dan's asking.
So,
do you understand where I'm going?
I do. Yeah. To step back and to be clear about what we're talking about, the Board of Supervisors long ago defined what they meant by full recovery. And so it's not an accounting rule, it's a Board of Supervisors policy as to what they wanted to count for full recovery. They chose to count, and this goes back to the early days of the Parks and Rec child care program, they chose to count direct operating costs related to that particular activity. And they limited those direct operating costs to those within that department. So there's no departmental overhead, nor is there
general county overhead.
You know, we have, as you know, as part of another process that's done every year for Department of Family Services, we have an indirect cost analysis study done by an outside firm that can give us different factors for what the indirect cost recovery should be for different things. But that's not the board's, you know, and we use that for some federal grants, for example. But that's not used by, that's not the board's policy as to what they mean by fully fee recovered. The two most prominent examples of this would be A, child care fees, which we generally have. Our child care programs generally run at about 105 to 110% of direct fee recovery. We know that means they're picking up some of the administrative overhead in that department, but they're not, you know, they're not picking up the cost that the school system has to leave that building open and leave a janitor there for us. Schools don't charge us, just like we don't charge them. That'd just be moving the dollars back and forth from one pocket to the next. The other example like that is the Claudemore Recreation Center. The core of the Claudemore Recreation Center is about 95,000 square feet of building. That building was built, it was approved for the CIP only with the provision that Chairman York put in that its operations would be fee recovered, would be 100% fee recovered. So again, the direct costs of operating that building. That doesn't pick up the debt service, but it's the direct operating costs of the activities that take place there. A few years later, they decided to, when the Sterling Community Center became unusable in its current format, they decided to add, because we were still in construction, 7,000 additional feet of activity space as part of the Claudemore Rec Center. That was not deemed, all of the activities in that were not deemed to fall under the full cost recovery plan by the board. So even there, there's a mix with that particular facility. So, but as I said, you know, we have, you know, an indirect cost analysis study. I'd be glad to certainly provide you all with that. And you can see for a variety, I mean, to do the indirect cost study, which is done, as I said, largely for a family services department, they have to do the whole county. So I can provide you all with a copy of that, and it will show the different overhead rates that would apply to different kinds of activities in the county. And you, certainly, it's not beyond the realm of logic that this committee could recommend or not recommend that the county, when establishing fees in the future, look at an overall rent cap, you know, an overall rent or an overall, you know, otherwise, other kind of overhead recovery rate. Again, the difference in some of this is some of our buildings are immensely old and we don't have any debt service for them, some of the old community centers in the West. On the other hand, we've got brand new buildings that we are paying debt service for. So, you know, there's not going to be a consistent number for all of that, but certainly you can use the indirect cost analysis to get at some of that.
And the indirect cost analysis includes the debt service on the facilities that are in use, yes?
I think it has debt service as one of its components, but I'm not sure even in that case that it's not strictly limited to the operating costs. I'll have to go back and look.
So to get to Dan's question about facilities is very difficult because of how the county accounts for facilities. And when we look at the program guide to what degree our facilities accounted for, the operating costs of those different programs that we look at, when you look at the
program review document or the budget document, which has department activities by program, the overhead pieces are generally not reflected. When you look at budget enhancements, when they go to the Board of Supervisors, as part of our enhancement process, we pick up at least the initial overhead costs for, say, the General Services Department or the IT Department when we add positions, so that we're trying to give us close to a full cost to the board for the initial cost of doing this maintenance. But that gets, without application, without taking, say, the General Services Department the operating budget and distributing it on a proportional basis to the rest of the county, it's hard to do that in succeeding years for ongoing operations. So we've kind of, you know, we're kind of trailing a middle ground between the two.
And facilities don't enter into it at all?
Unless we're having to rent space or renovate, in which case we'll try to capture it in the initial decision-making process, but it will not necessarily be captured in the succeeding years.
Right. To Don's point that he's been making all along, which is the way that the county accounts for the use of space is radically different than the way we account for it in the private sector. So my only point is, I think it's difficult for us to get to the facilities number that you're looking for, because the county doesn't keep its books down.
Right, and I'd certainly understand that point. What I was looking for is, there are and there are two very good examples there of, in one case we've got Claude Moore, which is, you know, probably close to 100% programs that would fall under cost recovery, in terms of usage. On the other hand, we've got an after-school daycare center, where you say, you know what, it doesn't make sense that the facility is there and there's minimal additional cost to keep it open for the extra hour for school systems. I guess what I'm thinking of is, could we, as part of looking at the programs and the fees, try to flag those programs that are in facilities dedicated to that program's use, so that we could perhaps as an add-on project, or perhaps as part of this project, dig into at least those facilities' costs and think about perhaps making a recommendation of how to differently allocate facilities costs on a go-forward basis. So at least tag those for further review as we're going through it, as compared to the other programs like daycare that are not in a facility dedicated to its primary purpose, or the facility isn't primarily for that program.
Just as a suggestion, as you proceed with the discussions, you could do that as an overall policy statement without actually digging into the numbers. You could recommend to the board that for the facilities that exist, that primarily exist for X use, like Claude Moore, that the cost related to that facility be included. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess in answering based on one program to the next, we can give you an idea of whether that facility or those facilities exist primarily for that use. It's a question of how much do you want to dig from there?
Well, because I think where we wanted to go as a subcommittee, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we wanted to examine, are the fees appropriate for the service that we're providing? That's kind of the overall goal. And in order to answer that question, I would want to see these additional facilities costs. And maybe it is more of a policy statement of, as we dig into it, we say, you know what, we think that there should be facilities costs associated with certain programs.
Right.
And I guess what I'm trying to figure out in advance is, how would we recommend which programs that there should be a facility cost allocation to, as opposed to other programs where perhaps it's not appropriate to have a facility cost allocation, without necessarily knowing the exact numbers?
It's going to be a difficult question to answer. I'll be honest. And for the county government, it's going to be difficult. Sort of come full circle. Many of the Parks and Rec child care programs are housed in the schools.
Right.
So we would have to be searching to the schools to provide you with the answer to,
right,
what it costs to operate the Lovettsville Elementary School, for example.
And I'm conscious that we're getting very granular on what is really a subcommittee issue, so I think we can resolve the matter this evening as follows. Question one is, do we want to see all programs, regardless of whether or not they recover 100% of their cost, as presently defined by the county? Because the original data request was, well, if the program is already recovering its cost, we don't need to look at it. So if the decision tonight is that we're not convinced enough that the definition of full cost recovery is a good definition, then I think the request to county administrations, even if the program recovers 100% of its cost, as presently defined, show it to us anyway. And then we can look at it at the subcommittee level and figure out which ones we want to scrutinize. And the only following comment I would make is that, for better or for worse, the way the county accounts for facilities is very different than the way we're used to in the private sector, and the cost of those facilities relative to various programs is not clear in the way the county does its budgeting and its accounting. So this becomes a very big philosophical issue if you really want to dig in, which you may want to. Woody.
Would it not be an appropriate recommendation that we suggest to the board that they review the way they calculate these things? I mean, as an over kind of reaching factor, rather than us digging around in it, that would be, seems to me, would be a recommendation we may want to consider doing.
So I'm
very familiar with this problem. Not-for-profits do it the same way. And it's just not accurate. It doesn't give the decision makers on the board of directors or the board of supervisors a clear picture of what the true costs actually are. So they're fooling themselves.
Maybe
that's the way they want to do it, but I think they ought to take a look at it.
It's a very good observation. So do folks want to continue this topic for a little bit, or are we 2 minutes? All right, so let's go back to the question of generally accepted government accounting practices. Is the way in which the county accounts for its assets, its facilities, consistent with the way it's supposed to account for those assets under government accounting practices?
Yes. What you're really looking for with this is a question of how do we show various program activities. And quite frankly, there are not specific definitions that we have to follow for that. I mean, we have the general county government as a whole, and all of the policies and procedures that we follow in accounting for that are GAAP, generally accepted county principles, and they're subject to the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. And they're really very precise about how we do this stuff. In terms of how to report specific activities that the government may do and what's the true cost, for those, that's an issue that the Governmental Accounting Standards Board has been struggling with for about 25 years now. They call it the service efforts and accomplishments part. They desperately like to put in the annual financial report, but they have never found a way to make something clear enough that it could be done by all 15 or 20,000 entities across the country who would have to report. So there isn't, at the program level per se, there is not a governmental standard for that, because that's, at the end of the day, that's not necessarily material for the bottom line of the county and its, financial level.
That's
eliminating.
It is. It's a 2.5-decade issue. But I think Woody's point still stands, and we could delve into a general recommendation about how the county does or does not show these costs as part of the program review. Because it is only partial information that you look at. Do folks feel strongly about this issue? I know you do.
Yeah,
you should. Then what I would recommend is that subcommittee want to take this up as an adjunct issue as we're looking at the fees. And then maybe we do say, okay, well, how would that have changed how we look at these fees? Wow, if it would have changed how we look at that fee, then there's something going on here that has a broader application. So it could be a follow-on recommendation from what we look at with respect to fees.
I'm happy to second that thought, that this be reviewed in more detail by Subcommittee 1.
I'll be glad to
let the
record
show that I volunteered.
I'll be glad to provide you with the.
I don't think we actually need a motion on it.
I don't think
we're that support of the Subcommittee 1 inquiry. I think it's a very good one.
Very good, thank you.
So to answer that first question, I think we want to look then at all program fees regardless of its
recovery. Very good, thank you.
May I have one comment?
Yes, ma'am.
Just to thank Mr. Mays for coming tonight. I can only imagine how many compartments your brain is split into at the moment with the finalization of the budget and been in the press and trying to get that to the end. And thank you for coming to help us.
Well, thank you. Glad to help in any way I can. Like I said, I will send on to you the, I'll send to Julie the indirect cost study, because that will give you some idea of general overhead. It's not county, it's a board policy to largely not do that over the years. And like any board policy, you can feel free to discuss that if you want.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move to Subcommittee 2. Ms. Matthews, Mr. Gordon.
Well, in terms of the fire and rescue funding recommendations, our last meeting was, I think, the 19th of February, and we roughed out that letter that was subsequently delivered, I think, around the 25th. It was the following Monday or Tuesday. We did go to the fire chief's meeting. We did have some fairly extended discussion of some of the background. We presented the letter. We answered a lot of questions. We asked them to get back to us within 45 days. And I think we've only heard from two. We heard from Sterling, who said that it should be based on, you know, needs-based. I don't think we've seen much more in detail. Then we heard from Hamilton. They said that it should be based on spread evenly, but I think they are the ones who, wasn't that them, ladies, who...
That's correct.
They said they're rethinking
it. We want to reconsider.
And we're withdrawing it. So they have 45 days from February 25th, so we're just kind of waiting for people to get back to us.
So most likely that comes up with your name.
Right.
And just one point of clarification, our subcommittee meeting was on March 7th, not February 19th. February 19th was the full commission.
That's what I meant when I said that, yes. At our March meeting, March 7th, we discussed in considerable detail the issue of Inspector General, and I will now turn this over to Mr. Soltes. Did you get one of these, Woody? Pass these around. We brought a bunch of them. Dan.
Thanks.
So that people take a minute to read them?
No, you can start walking.
Email, or is this different?
That's different.
This is different.
The minutes for email.
Okay, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to work on this issue. We started out by looking at inspectors general in national level, state level, county level, and examined several different counties that have an inspector general, looked at a lot of websites. And then the next step was to talk to people in Loudoun County who have some experience with our previous inspector general, since we had one from 1992 to 1997. And I, along with three other members of the subcommittee, met with Julie Pastor, Bob Wirtz, Linda Neary, Jack Roberts, Ben Mays, and Roger Zern. We asked them four questions. How familiar are you with the role? In what capacity were you familiar? How do you think it functioned within the government structure, and what could have been changed, if anything, to make it better? It was very clear, extremely clear, throughout the meetings that there were two consistent themes in just about every meeting. One was that the role was not clearly defined, and it led to a lot of confusion. Somebody else said along those lines there were too many masters. And the second point is that it became a political tool. And because of that, the credibility was lost. I said political tool, some people even called it a political weapon. I talked with Jack Roberts. Jack's a pretty direct guy, and he joined us at our subcommittee meeting. Jack made the comment, if it's done like it was 20 years ago, it will be a disaster. And Jack gave us a lot of comments about it. I spent a lot of time with Ben Mays, who just left, and talked about the internal audit functions that Loudoun County is doing right now. And he said it has three purposes. Number one is to use and close out the municipal bond funds, both county and school. Number two, examine and streamline the effectiveness of our land development process. And three, take a look at cash management processes. Ben said that these functions are both financial and management. We had a lot of discussion about all these different aspects of an inspector general. Mr. Hemstreet made some comments along with Jack about the form of government that we have versus a form of government where some of these other jurisdictions have an inspector general, and there's some differences there. the bottom line of all this is that we feel the concept of an inspector general is a good one. However, the goals and intentions of an inspector general can be best accomplished by the county through the internal audit process we have, along with three motions that we passed. And I'd like to go over each of those motions. The subcommittee recommended the Board of Supervisors that they significantly expand the visibility and accessibility of the citizen complaint hotline or other procedures whereby people could report concerns or wrongdoing. This motion passed unanimously. I'd like to make a point about that. In some of these meetings I had, I was told that we have a citizen hotline. So I went to the Loudoun County website, right here. I didn't see anything about a phone number. So I thought, okay, at the bottom it says contact us. Obviously, that's it. So you go to that page, and there are 33 phone numbers, and nothing even looks close to a what I would consider a citizen hotline.
Got a beef? Call this number.
So then I did a Google search. Loudoun County Citizen Hotline. Nothing. So if it exists, I can't find it.
It's Tim's home phone number.
I think the issue might be the name. It has a name, and it's called ACR, which stands for Automated Citizens Response. But Joe Blow Citizen isn't going to know to look for that. Right. You still can't find it.
Second motion that we passed was the subcommittee recommends the full GRC, finding that the need for an inspector general has not been sufficiently demonstrated to overcome the complex issues that would have to be resolved to make sure it was properly structured so as to not be either badly managed or politically abused. And this motion did not pass unanimously. It passed 5-2. And the discussion, and Don, you can talk about that because you're one of the dissenting votes, is that we like the idea of an inspector general, and Don, you can talk about, you know, your position on that. And as Loudoun County gets bigger, you know, it may be more appropriate. We think we're a pretty clean county, but maybe our recommendations won't completely address them all. And the third motion that we unanimously passed, that the county should consider appointing a citizen ombudsman, i.e. a designated person, to receive complaints or recommendations from government employees or citizens and to coordinate responses and to serve as a citizen advocate. And a friendly amendment was added that the ombudsman should publicly report to the Board of Supervisors on a regular basis. That's pretty much it. We think it's a good idea. What they would do, but we didn't feel that the structure of an inspector general is the best way to do it. And I'll leave it up to my two chairmen of the subcommittee to add whatever you feel is appropriate.
You very accurately reflected in here what we did on March 7th, and I think that those three motions hit it. So I'd suggest you might want to make those three motions here for the full commission.
Go ahead. Before we put the motions on the table, can we just ask a few questions? I'd like to ask a few questions sequentially here, either for Bill, yourself, or for Tim, or Julie. The Citizens Complaint Hotline, or whatever it is called, where does it appear, and who answers that, and what is done with those complaints today?
I know we have it.
It's not a big one.
Is that the ACR?
That's the ACR.
That's the one that goes to the public information.
Correct.
But it's not labeled, so no. We can label that.
Right.
The other thing that we've been talking about internally is we're actually contracting for it to a third party to take those, which would be off-site, and that would be a service.
Today, is it even represented as a complaint hotline?
No.
Who would call it? Is it more information about the county?
There's a main county number.
There's a main county number that would, I don't know if it's on the website or not, but there's a main county number. The ACR is a system used, I'm speaking a little out of my realm here, but I believe it is a system that is used to accept a citizen concerns or complaints in certain areas and track those complaints as they're sent to building and development for resolution or another department.
It's definitely a good idea to set up a number to do it.
Right, but it's not a general citizen complaint.
It's an automated system. I understand you leave a message. It's like leaving a message. Is that what you do?
No, you call during business hours.
A person picks it up. That person is automated in the sense that person then uses a computer system to log the complaint, and it follows a complaint, but not general complaints or complaints limited to certain areas of the county government. So it's not a general citizen. Whoever said we have a general citizen hotline, we don't.
So could we potentially modify that motion to talk about the automated ACR system and turning it into more of a, what do I call it, a citizen complaint hotline?
Absolutely.
Second question, let me drop down to number three, the
automated system. Well, I think you could say the recommendation could be that you recommend that the county establish a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline for citizens, employees. Just
whatever you call it now, whatever they might call it, it's clear that
waste, fraud, and abuse hotline.
I like that.
Bill was in meetings with people who said, yeah, we have a complaint hotline, we got a procedure, but then, it's clear that there's a need to enhance that. And when you say waste, fraud, and abuse,
in this room knew about it.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad.
I mean, we have a general county phone number, and I think that may be what they're talking about.
I don't know what they're talking about.
There's one called Loudoun County Main Switchboard.
Right, yes. That's a general number.
That is the general.
What's that number?
0100.
So if you call that number, the person picks it up during business hours.
Bill, maybe just think about it while we're working over these questions. Call it something like a waste, fraud, and abuse hotline. I think actually that has a lot of merit, giving it an appearance and a profile.
Could I add something to what you just said I think would be helpful? Roger Zern had a very good story. And Roger said that on one Saturday afternoon he was at a store in Leesburg, and he was paying his bill with his credit card or check, whatever, and the guy took his money and said, "Roger Zern, oh, you're the guy I pay my taxes to." "Yeah, that's right." "Well, I wish you'd manage your county funds a little bit better." And Roger said, "What do you mean?" He says, "About 3:30 every day, back behind my store, all the inspectors sort of gather and have a bull session, and right before 4 o'clock, they head to their office." And Roger said, "Really?" The guy said, "Yeah, come on Monday. You'll see." So Roger went there about 3 o'clock. Three cars were there. 15 minutes later, a fourth car came up. Roger said, "Wow." So Roger immediately called the head of the department, Terry Wharton, and Roger said Terry took care of that situation immediately. Corrective action was taken. But in a situation like that, it just happened to be where Roger, and this was years ago, I don't know when it was, but, a situation like that where if a guy sees that and thinks, these guys are just, hanging out, or if you see a neighbor down the street and you see between 11 and 1 every day, the county car is parked in his driveway, something like that, then that would give an opportunity to a citizen instead of happening that the treasurer just happenstance. So anyway, Tom, I just threw that in to add it to your comment because I thought it was appropriate, but go ahead.
I would like to see that in the motion. I would ask the question, it was going to be my question also, the ombudsman, a hotline like that, who would respond to that? Did that go to or where? Would those calls then be, would it be a live person answering that? Would that person then refer the call? Would that be contemplate that? Refer that out?
Well, I think what I'd like to do is contract.
Contract service.
Yep. And then we designate, it probably goes to county administration, and then we would send it to the place and make sure it's not.
That's really an extension of the first thing. I mean, if somebody calls in, we were thinking if somebody calls in, if they make a complaint, whether they think there's building inspectors cribbing behind the furniture store, or somebody solicited a bribe, or some supervisor thinks that, or some aide thinks their supervisor's asking them to make political work during the day, whatever, somebody has a place to go. You can make a phone call, you can send an email. It should be available by email or phone call. Whether or not it should be unanimous, I think it should be like the zoning complaint hotline where you have to give your name, but your name is not necessarily immediately available. But then the question is, and the reason we said ombudsman, in our mind, ombudsman's different from an inspector general in that they, you know, they have a more let's respond to complaints, but not as an independent, I've got all these powers thing. They're an employee of the organization who's tasked to investigate the complaints that are received and to be a citizen activist. That's kind of what we're thinking by an ombudsman, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So an ombudsman would take this waste, fraud, abuse hotline one step beyond.
Yes.
Basically,
that's, the, that's kind of the concept.
It would be a person embodied with that.
Would that ask a question about that?
If I may ask a question, where's the county administrator? Would that, Bob, would you consider that to be somebody, like I see it in the motion, first motion, report the Board of Supervisors, hired by the Board of Supervisors, reporting to the Board of Supervisors?
We think the ombudsman would be an employee of county government, you know, an employee subject to the county administrator. That to us, it's like the ombudsman at the Washington Post, when they had one, was an employee of the Washington Post. It wasn't, you know, an independent entity.
So we report to the,
county administrator,
county administrator, hired by the county administrator, reporting to the county administrator, as opposed to what it says here, report to the Board of Supervisors.
Well, when we say that, what that publicly report, we felt like it would be good process and good for people to see that, okay, if I make a complaint, you know, whether it's quarterly or whatever, semi-annually, I don't think you need it monthly, but every quarter, hey, here's the complaints that have come in, here's how we dealt with them, you know. That doesn't necessarily mean when you say publicly report to the Board of Supervisors, I don't believe it was our intent that they be direct employees of the Board of Supervisors.
That's more of a report. As Bob said, they would report to Tim, but they would make reports to the Board of Supervisors. That's for a better way to put it, make reports.
It needs to be more clear. I read it. I was uncertain as to whether the report Well, my question was, I read this as a volunteer position when I say citizen ombudsman, but you clarified that you see this as a W-2 employee. Okay. So I put that in this version.
Cliff, then Don?
First question, was it determined that if you did have an inspector general, would they have the right to go into the school administration's budget and they would have to be cooperated with?
The question that was specifically asked a couple meetings ago, the answer is yes. There's a specific state code provision that gives the Board of Supervisors to investigate any entity to which it provides funds, and it's absolutely crystal clear that includes the school board, and so that if you had an inspector general, that the inspector general would have jurisdiction to investigate matters within school board administration, just as they could general county administration.
So they could go dive into the budget, determine how the money is being spent, where it's being spent,
Make
recommendations back to the board.
Yes, and I would have to say, I mean, based on some of the experiences that subcommittee one had, our initial thinking was if you do have the power to investigate the school board, that might be a reason to do this. But then, you know, as we dug into it deeper, the Board of Supervisors has the absolute power to make any function of the school board or anything a subject for review by this internal audit function that they've established in the last couple of years. They could establish, the Board of Supervisors could hire someone to be a full-time reviewer of the, let's say, opaque school board budget. So it's not that the Board of Supervisors lacks the power to scrutinize in greater detail the operations of the school board or the school board's administration.
So is that an accurate statement?
I believe it. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Jack Roberts felt that way too.
So, given that comment, then I can agree with the lack of a need for an inspector general. If we didn't have that second part, then I would agree this is the reason to have one. The other two recommendations, I don't know why we're deciding to create something that we weren't asked to necessarily look at, and I have not heard that there's this burning problem with complaints, a myriad of complaints coming in, not being answered, people don't know what to do or how to. I just don't know that there's a problem that we're solving by actually creating another employee. I kind of like the idea that, you know, if we have some kind of a hotline and kind of pumping it up a little bit, so there is a place that people can call. And then if that process is made more known and there is a problem with it not being, those complaints not being handled properly, then maybe something needs to be done. But I don't know about jumping right to hiring an employee to be the complaint department.
When I maybe so. I think we're closer. I mean, your comment about the lack of complaints, this one of the things the report says is, you know, that in a lot of jurisdictions where they have an inspector general, it's because, A, you have a form of government where you have two separate elected bodies, and the inspector general seems to play a role of keep an eye on both of them for the other. And a lot of jurisdictions that have inspector generals, Chicago, New York, lots of jurisdictions in Florida, have an entrenched history of corruption. And we don't have that here, and we don't have a lot of complaints. And, you know, I think the complaints that do come in, it's still a small enough jurisdiction that people, if they really have a beef, they call up their supervisor, you know. But we did feel that to the extent that there is a, well, let's put it this way. When we got into it and we realized that some people thought there was a citizen hotline and we couldn't even find it, it's not a lot of extra work to set something up and publicize it.
And I can support that, but I would not then also go to the recommendation and do this as well. I think we start with one and see where we go from there before we just create another county government position.
Yeah.
We'll then need his staff, and then it just grows from there.
Well, and I mean, to that point, I would just want to verify with Tim and Julie that if this were better publicized, do you think you've got the staff already available to handle whatever?
Yeah, I mean, we have a division within county administration that's called communications and public affairs. And so actually, I think what I would do is take, I've got a constituent manager, I don't know what Michelle's title is, but she essentially deals with constituent services. So typically, these kinds of situations that you're talking about, people will send an email to aos@loud.gov, or they'll call their board member, or it'll come in through the 0100 line, and we'll get a complaint, and that gets assigned to the same person. So when I read the motion, my feeling was we would just have that person serve as that capacity. The one thing I would do is probably, I think we could probably contract out that number for not too much money, because then you would get a report of all the complaints that are coming from a third party.
Right. Nobody could hide it.
Right. You know, we could even implement it by having that list or the calls and complaints go to the board, and then have our constituent services people do the follow-up on it. You know, then obviously if there's something that's more serious, then we would refer that to law enforcement.
I like the idea that somehow getting back to the board supervisors, as opposed to staying with the county staff.
I don't. The only additional cost that I see is potentially contracting out for the hotline, but I don't know that that's a lot of money just because.
If I'm a supervisor and a complaint comes in relative to something in my district, for example, I would want to know about that if the citizen didn't call me directly. And I think it is sometimes a little too easy to say, just call your supervisor. You think about how many people are registered to vote, how many people vote, and how many people vote for a particular supervisor. A whole lot of folks wouldn't even think of calling a county supervisor, not even sure the scope of responsibilities of a supervisor.
And when we do get complaints either to the county admin, generally mailbox, or to the 100 number, I'm not convinced it's going
to
cost anything.
You're not convinced to hire an ombudsman?
No, what I'm saying is I would take
phone line.
I have people
the hotline
that are
part.
Kind of doing
okay.
That
okay.
Function already.
Gotcha.
I mean, that's what Julie was talking about in terms of following up on the ACR system. The ACR system is just a computer system that we use to track those
right.
things.
It's a trouble system.
Right.
I agree generally with the direction we're going, but as an item of consideration, several previous and current supervisors have informed me that they have already agreed to the position of Inspector General. They just haven't got one. Now, that kind of makes me think that they have some value to this already. And I'm not advocating for it or against it. I'm just bringing this up as something to think about. If this board or the previous one has already created that position, but haven't filled it, then maybe they won't want.
I'm not worried about whether they want one or not. We were asked to provide a recommendation, and they're going to do what they do.
I hear you. I'm just putting that out there as something to consider.
The question came up in a recent board meeting, and then Supervisor Reed asked us that question, whether we could bring back a recommendation in favor of the Inspector General immediately, which would have been actually last month, and I said that was not going to be possible. I'm just beginning to take it up. There was, I think, some limited conversation around the table about earmarking a certain amount of money for that potential position. As far as I know, that went nowhere. Is that correct? He's not requested.
Correct.
They did have a discussion at two budget work sessions ago on whether or not to look at funding the position.
I suspect the bigger driver. I personally support these recommendations. I'm not sure I support the citizen ombudsman, but I certainly support raising the profile and rebranding this citizen complaint hotline. But I am concerned by limiting recommendation number two the way it is. We haven't addressed what I think is the critical issue for some members of the Board of Supervisors, which is being able to get greater access to LCPS. That's what's driving this.
Well, that was my concern, but it sounds like they have the ability to do that under their current structure. That's what I was just told. So if they already have the ability to do it, why do you need to create this job to do what they already have the ability to do?
Right.
And they aren't doing.
Perhaps we should acknowledge that in the motion here. With our understanding that the county currently has the ability to do so, to reach to LCPS.
Well, is that a recommendation that they utilize that? And
yes.
Forward on?
And perhaps that's even a sharper point. Right. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
One is, on the first page, it says currently Loudoun County uses internal auditors to look at the following three items. And it has 1, 2, and 3 that use closed out municipal bond funds, exam streamline effectiveness, cash management processes. That's the year one scope. They've continued the internal audit function into FY14, so they have not determined what that scope of work is. So if you have recommendations, or if the committee has recommendations as to what potential second year scopes or areas to look at, that would seem to fall into what you're talking about right now.
Perhaps that's a fourth motion. We leave three on the table here for consideration, and we add a fourth one relative to the current internal audit function.
The other thing is, if I could recommend just an edit, a change on the top of your second page, kind of third line down. First sentence, it says what the Board of Supervisors have heard the legislative and legal function. I think that's probably a better statement to say the Board of Supervisors have both legislative and executive authority.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they are a governing body, so they are both the executive and the legislature together.
And I do like it with this, if we're going to this automated hotline, to your point about having it be done by a third party, so there can't be the, well, oh, you guys are just burying your own complaints and it's not going to go anywhere. Well, that can't happen in this process, because that'll be handled by a third, and then if it's a report, it'll be a public document.
So you recommend that be included in the motion? That be included in the recommendation?
I would think follow-on to part of the first recommendation about expanding and...
And I think based on what we discussed tonight, the first recommendation probably needs some wordsmithing. Do you want to take that and come back, or do you want to take a venture at that tonight?
Oh, tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. All right, well, I've got some language to propose then. With respect to the internal audit, the GRC recommends that the Board of Supervisors use its existing authority under the Code of Virginia to include audit of Loudoun County Public Schools, to include unaudit of Loudoun County Public Schools as part of the scope of work for its internal audit function. Unaudit might be too broad, but...
How about a review of critical school functions?
Yeah, I'm with
audit
Dan.
Critical,
I think.
LCPS functions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Review, not audit.
Why not?
Well, I don't mind calling it audit. Huh?
Well, because at least in
but
my mind, audit.
Through.
An audit implies, at least in my mind, a financial audit, as opposed to review is more operational controls, which I think is what we're looking
for. The kind of things.
A finite activity as opposed to ongoing.
So, for a hypothetical example of things that I would like to see reviewed is when
Loudoun
kind of, they have a defined training criteria program for all of their employees, and there are numerous organizations and companies in the local area that provide that service, but they fly somebody in from California multiple times a year to provide that, and you find out it's because it's a friend of a certain person, so they fly somebody in from California, put them up so they can provide that training. When there are plenty of companies and organizations right here in the local area that could easily have provided the same training, hypothetically. That's the kind of thing that I want somebody to be able to look at and say, what are you doing? So if that's included in the verbiage you're using, then I'm all for it.
Sounds like a guy who's seen government at work.
Scott, let's try that motion again.
Well, let me suggest this. I think our first motion should be, and let me read it. We're going from the bigger to the smaller, okay? I would say the Government Reform Commission finds, this is a motion that we approve this statement and transmit it to the board with some edited version of this report. The Government Reform Commission finds that the need for an inspector general has not been sufficiently demonstrated to overcome the complex issues that would have to be resolved to make sure that it was properly structured so as to not be badly managed or politically abused. That's our finding in direct response to their question about the IG. The rest of us is explanatory. Two, we change that recommendation about the hotline to say something like, the GRC recommends to the Board of Supervisors that the board establish or expand a hotline, i.e., quote, waste, fraud, and abuse hotline, end quote, or citizens' complaint hotline, end quote, whereby citizens could report concerns or wrongdoing. And I just added, this hotline should be operated by a third party, not by county administration. Okay? That's our second motion. Now, I'm okay with not recommending an ombudsman at this time. I don't think we throw it out for consideration, but if people don't feel it's needed, we don't need to make a motion on that. And that leaves you for number three, which is?
The GRC recommends the Board of Supervisors use its existing authority under the Code of Virginia to include an audit of LCPS functions as part of the scope of work for its internal audit group. And the group is called an internal audit group. So, I mean, the term audit, I understand where you're coming from, Dan, but the term audit doesn't scare me because it's an audit group. That's what they do. And we talk about audits in a very particular fashion in the corporate world, but it has a broader meaning.
Well, no, I understand. I mean, I work as an auditor professionally.
More of an event as opposed to an ongoing
That's kind of what I'm getting at. An audit is generally a specific set of procedures. Whereas a review is more broad in terms of what it can be applied to within the context of internal audit.
That's fine. I don't have a problem with that at all. So an audit, an ongoing review
audit, and
an ongoing review.
Yeah, that's fine. I would recommend we change the second motion that Bob mentioned, in terms of an inspector general, the fact that it's not sufficiently demonstrated to overcome the complex issues, I think that's very important. But I think it, what's equally important in terms of how we consider this is the fact that the county is already engaged with an internal audit group. Is it external or that we've created? Okay, so that we've hired externally. So we've already engaged. So it's the fact that we have already engaged with a group to provide internal audit functions is, I think, part of why we're concluding that an inspector general is not necessary at this time.
I respectfully disagree, because even when the internal audit group is done, at some point the engagement is finished, I think we're concluding we still don't need an inspector general at that time. I think the inspector general question is broader than the internal audit. We don't think we need that. And, oh, by the way, we do have an internal audit. and so let's also have them attack this problem. So I do think it's two different issues.
Let me add to that. Say, it's really, when we keep referring to it as internal audit, it's an external auditing function. It's an external company that we hire on contract to look at selected things. So, but my direct response, I agree with Scott for slightly different reasons. To me, that's one of the reasons we're making our recommendation, but I don't think we need to include a reference to that in the motion. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're doing it, for sure. But so I don't see that we need to add that to the motion.
I was suggesting that we put it in the motion because I'll put it this way. Somehow I'd like to convey to the Board of Supervisors that that was part of the consideration.
We're planning on submitting this, something like this, you know, edited version of this, which has that context. But I have to say, Since we studied it, that was a factor. But to us, the greater factor was, it's really like, who do they report to?
Right.
What are their functions? Who reviews them? There's a lot of complexity there. And as we said in here, Mr. Hemstreet felt that, well, the fact that we've established this external audit function to look at separate things is important. And our reaction was, yeah, but that doesn't, you know, that's not the end of the discussion. It's a factor.
How would you like to proceed, Tom?
With the reference to the internal audit function, the new item we're going to add, I'm comfortable with that, and I completely understand your point there. I think in the terms of it not sufficiently demonstrated, that's what we're getting at, that there are other things out there which would mitigate the need for a separate inspector general. But with the insertion of the new motion, I'm comfortable that we've at least addressed what we think is the strength here that the county has in this internal audit function. So I would propose that, I would entertain a motion first, if we could address all of these together as a single motion, and if not, I would be happy to separate these out if anybody is not prepared to vote for against all of them.
We're striking the ombudsman.
So we have the three that will be restructured as Mr. Gordon has just read to us, so they'll all be the Government Reform Commission recommends to the board.
If you could, I mean, what I wrote down, what you said, but maybe a slightly different wording, was that I said the Government Reform Commission recommends that the Board of Supervisors use its existing authority under the Code of Virginia to audit or review selected operations and activities of the Loudoun County Public Schools. This could be a focus of the county's contracted external auditors in coming years.
I think it reads better as two sentences, so I appreciate the edit. Thank you.
And you see, I said we keep referring to the school board, but we're really talking LCPS. Selected operations and activities of Loudoun County Public Schools. We're not trying to say what.
Yes.
That's up to the board. Well, I'm okay with all three of them as one.
Mr. Chair, I move that the GRC adopt this as a recommendation for the board of supervisors.
Second.
Go ahead. Your turn.
I'd like to second
it. Ms. Matthews, any discussion, Don? Any discussion?
No.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None? Hearing none? It passes unanimously. Good work, Bill.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give this to you ladies so that you can take the language, because I've really written it one, two.
We've got the tables.
But then you can scan this and send it back to me, because Bill and I will want to edit this a little more.
Okay.
That's going to be a question.
Gotcha.
Send it back to us.
Bill, ask you. That could have been a long motion.
Mr. Chairman, may I please put a public commendation on the record to one of our newest members for his dauntless effort here and all the meetings you led this effort.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bill. I enjoyed it. Excellent. Take up other business very briefly here. I'm still hoping we can conclude the business of the commission by June. That's the intent. I think I hope we can wind down our meetings in May. That's the intent. I think the fire and rescue funding may be one issue. Of course, that also depends on what we do on these cost of services and fees issues. But I think we certainly are looking at a meeting in April, and certainly looking at a meeting in May. So the next two subcommittees are scheduled to be April 2nd and 4th, and then we don't have a meeting until the end of the month, on April 23rd. Let me ask you this question, Bob and Tanya, subcommittee too. That's also coming up in 2 weeks.
We were just going to say, I mean, if the only thing left on our plate that we're aware of
is fire and rescue funding, and we won't have the answer.
And the 45 days won't be over then,
right, right.
So we should have a meeting in early May.
Okay, so we will scrap the
no
subcommittee
April
two
meeting.
And Scott, for subcommittee one, assuming you have the information, you'll move ahead with that subcommittee meeting. Otherwise, we'll reschedule that.
So, for my fellow subcommittee members, I propose we keep the date on the 2nd. Julie will let us know what we will have in time for that meeting. If it's not possible for us to have something to work on, then we'll reschedule it. We should leave the date on the calendar, expecting that we'll have something.
Any other business? Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. We are adjourned at 7:37. 37. 7.